Hello and welcome back to The Inverted Castle, a Metroidvania enthusiast podcast. This is my hole. It was made for me, Eric Fox, and joining me inside of my hole, no, I'm not rephrasing that, it's Tom Blight.
You going for the Junji Ito reference?
I mean, blame Amigara, okay? I think I might have hit rock bottom with this joke, but I'm going to have to keep digging as we start exploring Spelunker 2. Yusha Eino Chosen, aka Challenge of the Hero, a game about as awkward to say as it is to play. Developed by Now Production and published by Irem, it has a superficial relation to the original Spelunker on the Atari, but is mostly doing its own thing.
I saw someone claim a literal translation as Challenges for the Brave, which I kind of actually like better as a title.
Yeah, I feel like brave is often like a translation for like hero, knight, whatever your protagonist is in these action games, whichever you prefer. And I guess in this one, hero might actually not be strictly accurate because, hey, you can be a real asshole and still keep playing. But regardless, initial impressions.
I mean, it was playable-ish. This goes down in my, whiff save states. This works.
Yeah, it is playable with about 11 asterisks. I think it's neat, but ultimately there's a lot of perfunctory ideas that don't really go anywhere, but surprisingly competent in strange ways. But I guess we'll get into that after we very briefly go over what counts as a story, which is so often the case in these games. I don't imagine you know what's going on.
I mean, we've got the story that you get from the bags in game, and that at least spells out something, right?
Yeah, the hint system of when you loot corpses comes with a scroll every time that either hints towards what you need to do or some flavor text. But what I've gathered through really ill-cited Wikipedia page and various strategy guides is this. So, 1,000 years ago, humans were living in Fairyland, and then this asshole Gala kicks them out and conquers it for himself. So it's been a millennia, and now humans, toiling in the human world for so long, discover a way back to Fairyland. So you either are gathering their treasures or trying to free them. Like, there's a lot of freeing fairies in this game as well, at the end of every round. But the end goal is ostensibly to kill Gala, but as it turns out, some other nameless dude beat you to it, and so you just kill him.
Yeah.
And depending on your karma, you either come up to a door that's locked, or you get invited in and can just live in Fairyland, or there's a princess there and says, hey dude, thanks, you live with me now. And this is all dependent on your karma rating slash how quickly you beat the game. It's not clear, and hours of looking online for guides, I still am not sure exactly what the criteria are.
Yeah, it's funny because I got the closed gate ending.
Same.
I went and looked up the guide, and the guide didn't even acknowledge that as a possibility. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I was very slow. I had already ticked over to one day, which, by the way, the day system in it is weird because I expected it to tick over when it reached 24 and it did not. I think it reached 30.
Time works differently in Fairyland. The fairy earth turns slower.
I mean, maybe it's just a 30 minute session is a day. I don't know, right? And I'm thinking about it too hard in terms of real time.
Yeah, because I don't think the hours quite line up to minutes exactly.
Or real fake time. I'm confused now. It's not a clock. It's not a wall clock.
It's not a clock, and it's not like clear that it's doing anything other than just like keeping track of how long you've been in the game. Yeah, I got the exact same ending. I had to look up. As far as I could tell from the long play I saw, the only difference was that they were quicker and they got the best ending. So regardless, it's not all that important. Otherwise, I'm not like consumed with envy that I didn't get a true ending to my narrative.
And this is interesting because a lot of it is we're reading some fan translation, right?
Yes.
And I don't know very much about this fan translation, but there's like bags. It's so like you pick up a bag, you get food, a message, and you lose some of your virtue, which we should talk about. But one of them says, "My son is my pride and joy. I expect he's beaten Gala by now." Gala.
I've seen it transliterated different ways, but I think that is the way it's supposed to be.
And become Prince of Fairyland.
Yeah, and then you get another bag from another skeleton that said, "I can't believe I got stabbed in the back by that nice-looking boy."
Yeah, I think I missed that one. There's like, I don't know, there was in the second level, there's one area that I never actually went to that I thought I would need a key for, and it just turned out, no, that's optional.
There's a lot of this game that's optional, as it turns out. If you know where to go, it's a very quick game, because unfortunately, this game might not count for our purposes, but we should probably get into the general gameplay, which is platformer exploration. You navigate a maze of caverns, an overworld a bit, ruins, but it's mostly just a series of hallways, doors, pathways, and enemies in between you and them. You can jump and, in a surprising move, actually have air control. There are like the Castlevania style like staircases up and down between levels, but it does not have the Castlevania when you jump, you commit to the jump.
Yeah.
Which was nice, but you have a health bar instead of the original Spelunker, which was one and done, you get hit, you die, and if you fall more than 15 pixels, you die. In this game, enemies and hazards barely put a dent in your health bar, honestly.
I mean, it started adding up for me. Maybe I'm just bad. But yeah, a lot of them you can actually face tank. And you have, at the beginning of the game, you choose a balance of rations and bombs. And honestly, I probably could have selected all rations. Maybe that means I wasn't using the bombs effectively.
As far as I'm aware, the only correct decision is to only have the rations. Yeah, bombs and rations. Rations just give you back health. Bombs will open up bomb doors, of which there are basically none at all in comparison to how many bombs you're going to collect over the course of the adventure. So stocking up on them early doesn't really do you any good.
You can use them in fights.
You can, but their odds are the enemy's either going to run away or you have to use something else to lock them in place, either a spell or these weird apples that put them to sleep. And even then, if you don't run away like immediately, you're also going to lose like a quarter of your life from the bomb explosion.
There were a couple areas where there's a rope down and a big enemy at the bottom. And I was like, I just can't be bothered with this. I'm going to drop one of my 13 bombs.
You know, I never considered that gravity affects bombs.
It does.
In retrospect, I am Boo Boo the Clown. I am an idiot.
Nice.
Okay, you have two uses for bombs: doors and when you just cannot be arsed to fight something at the bottom of a cliff.
The one thing that you could perceive as a Metroidvania-esque ability gain is getting the crucifix.
So about that.
Yeah.
The crucifix, which if you have enough karma, which is also a bar just underneath your life, you can use it to eviscerate undead enemies. And unless you're playing as the clergy class, we will get into the different classes in a minute, it's the only way to fight undead. And killing undead, like the zombies and ghosts, also raise your karma quite a bit. It's good to keep that topped off. It is morally good to kill ghosts.
Yeah, which I think kind of undermines the karma system, actually.
Boy, does it. You're either at all or none, basically all points, even as you're collecting loot from the corpses, which you kind of need to if you're playing the game for the first time, because it's the only way you're going to know how to progress with it through its hints.
Yeah, so that there's going through the other pickups, there's the bags, which we talked about, which I guess is supposed to be robbing the dead.
Yeah.
For the reason that it decreases your virtue, but it gives you a hint, it gives you another ration.
Yeah, there's usually a skeleton nearby to at least somewhat justify it being a corpse. But yeah, there are also like caches that are like wooden boxes, essentially, that will not decrease your karma and usually give you bombs. In one case, it's the rosary / crucifix.
It's usually bombs and ammo if you're playing as the explorer.
Ah, I did not. So I never saw ammo the whole game.
Like it's bomb and ammo together, which is kind of nice.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
There's the silver and gold keys. Silver keys are for doors on the overworld. Gold keys only ever seem to be for doors that are presented in groups of three.
Yeah, you'll just go into the background and there'll just be a selection of three doors. Just pick a door. If you choose wrong, you'll have to do a little platforming section to gain your key back. Maybe you'll be rewarded with ammo, maybe not.
Yeah.
And then just try again. There's only one correct answer.
Yep. And then there's also the apples.
Yeah, they're legendary fairy apples, which if you chuck it at an enemy, they'll just be frozen for a while. Works on bosses. Works on every boss.
Yep. You don't need to dodge them. This is not I want to be the guy.
I absolutely dodged them for the first round.
Yeah. So they put bosses in stasis temporarily so that you can wail on them.
Yeah. Very good and very necessary for the speed run.
And they've got like an arc to their throw.
Yeah. You don't place it down like a bomb. You lob it and you can absolutely whiff the lob.
Yeah, definitely did that more than once. I also tried to feed them to a deer.
Not the food the deer needs.
Yeah. Also not that deer. But I guess let's talk the characters.
Oh, I actually want to circle back to the rosary.
Oh, sure. Rosary.
Yeah, two things. Because you had mentioned that it was one of the things that is like an ability gate.
Yeah.
The thing is, you don't actually need to kill any undead to progress. You could theoretically just run, jump, walk past them. It'll definitely be annoying, but you can do it. But also, if you somehow beat round one, the first stage without it, it will just give it to you for free at the beginning of round two.
Yeah, I guess it's part of just setting it back to initial items was probably just easier to be like, and they get the rosary if they didn't already have it.
Indeed. And also it's a moot point if you happened to choose clergyman as your character. And that is how we will transition into classes.
Whoa.
Damn, he's good.
Actual transitions.
Okay, so you played as... there's three classes.
Yep.
You played as Explorer, I played as Esper, and then I checked out the clergyman. Those are the three. What makes the Explorer so good?
He's got a gun. That's pretty much all he's got going for him. He's got a pretty normal sword. He's got a gun. The gun has ammo of its own. You get them from the same crates as you get bombs. The gun is pretty strong. It's stronger than a regular attack, and it also pierces through enemies. So if you ever have more than one enemy lined up, you can just clear them all.
Very good. Yeah. He also has more life and more max virtue compared to the Esper. Less virtue than the clergyman, much more health than clergyman.
Yeah, I felt pretty good about using him. I don't know.
He does start with the most amount of stuff. You get to choose six items instead of the clergyman gets three of rations / bombs and the Esper only gets one. So yeah. That's a good way to start out. Just load up on the rations and you'll never die.
I went for balanced, which is maybe a mistake. By the end of round two, I was feeling a little low on health just because I wasn't reverting my save state every time I fall off of a rope.
Yeah. Especially because of the fact that you're an explorer, you don't get any of the other two abilities, which kind of, I don't know, I think in my opinion seem to just end up being better for survivability.
Oh yeah, I saw a website that basically just said, I think Cleric is the best, and then ESPer, and then the Explorer.
I would flip Esper and Clergyman myself. I'm not being biased just because I chose the ESP guy, but...
Why don't you tell us what they do?
Exactly. So I'll start with the Clergyman because I think he's slightly weaker, and then build to, obviously, the GOAT. Clergyman, he has a staff which is slightly longer range than the other two's little knife. He also has magic, which functions the same as the apples, where it'll just lock an enemy in place for a while. But instead of an arc, it just goes straight across like a bullet, which is quite nice. He also has the ability that his attacks just affect undead natural style. No need for a rosary. Rosary's still easier to use since it's like a big AoE type thing.
Yeah.
But you don't need it, so you can absolutely fight undead at low karma / virtue. And then he has another spell called Aura, which only functions in boss rooms, and for a huge chunk of your health will just full screen just deal a bunch of damage.
Yeah.
I ended up just doing a quick like run through of round one with him. And I literally just stood in the doorway, cast it twice, and the boss was dead.
Huh.
Didn't need to move or anything. It cost a bunch of health, but it's easy.
All right, so chug some rations and aura your bosses to death.
Essentially, yeah. Like, that's the one where bosses are just no longer an issue. You just have to worry about your lower health pool.
I can see someone saying with that, the cleric is the best. But tell me about the ESPR.
So the thing about that is, as long as you can keep your karma high and you can, like, the bosses aren't that hard to fight. The thing about the Esper is, for one thing, it also gets a ranged attack like the Explorer, except instead of ammo, it uses a tiny fraction of your health. Like, I think you get 8 shots per pip, and you have like 14 pips to begin with. So you get a fair few, and it does enough damage that there's no reason to ever use your sword, really. But the biggest thing is that Esper gets Furori's Wind from Ocarina of Time. At any point, you can just pop down your ability anywhere on the map, and then when you use it again, you teleport right back to it.
Which sounds useful for speedrunning.
Yeah, or if you just reach a like fork in the road and you're not sure which way's progress or if you're going to need to come back, and so you just pop it down. It's a bit awkward because you can't cancel it after you've popped it down. You have to use it. So you can't change your mind later and want to put down another one. You have to go back.
All right.
But it saved so much time and backtracking and getting like errant hits from enemies that respawned or environment hazards, all that stuff. I just go right back and no fuss, no muss. Made round two take half as long because that had like two like really long paths that split fairly early on that I was able to just kind of warp back several times as I tried to find out where the hell to go. Where's that damn fourth blue key?
I also had to backtrack a lot in round two.
There are only 3 rounds, and round three is fairly straightforward and kind of small. Round two is where it gets aggressively labyrinthine and a lot of places that look the same as other places.
Right. There is another ability gate, which is the magic sword.
Technically, no.
No, you can beat the boss without the magic sword?
Absolutely, you can. The boss doesn't take a lot of like damage from anything other than it, but you can. And that's what the speedrun does. Chucks an apple at him, and then as the Esper just uses his magic lightning bolts, and with just one apple, that over and over and over again.
Wow.
He's down.
Okay.
Just make sure the final boss is, like, his little shield is up a bit so you can fire underneath it.
Man, you must be able to rapid fire that lightning bolt then.
No, because enemies in this game have invulnerability frames when they're flashing, so you have to tap it at a rhythm.
Oh, so it just lasts that long?
They stay asleep for so long, apparently. Also, I keep referencing the speedrun. There is only one run on speedrun.com. Only one guy decided that, you know what? I'm going to do it. Shoutouts to Author Blues. He did it. He got a run in. And then it's just like, I'm done with this game. Please, someone else play this. This is technically world record by default.
Yeah. I don't know. The magic sword was also just nice to have in that final stage in that it can also hit undead.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's not that hard to switch to the rosary.
No. And also, just want to point out like a neat quality of life thing of you can pause and then like also switch to your inventory without having to unpause. Like it just swaps between those two menus. I just thought that was a neat thing where I'd accidentally hit the wrong button to bring up my inventory and was able to just easily transition.
That is nice.
Shame about how they designed the map layout.
It is a little hard to map out this game.
So I'm sure people are familiar with the 180 rule in filmmaking, where you're like the camera's not supposed to cross that invisible line and swap characters over.
I mean, it can. You just need to do it very deliberately and not like swap back and forth over it, over a scene.
Exactly, because it gets disorienting. This one commits an equivalent thing in platformers, like side-scrolling, where the plane you're looking at, like the left and right you're moving across, you can also move into the foreground and into the background. Occasionally, doing that will then swap you so that if you move into the background, suddenly you come from the left, and now the side-scrolling orientation is flipped, not congruent with like trying to make a map out of it.
Yeah, I found the right way to handle it was just make a map of each 2D area and then add notes of, okay, A goes to B, B goes to whatever, right, for transition points, rather than try to like construct a 3D space that makes these work.
I'm more thinking of like, I didn't make a pen and paper map, I kind of brute forced it, but the mental mapping of where things go really got disjointed. So if you're lazy like me, you will probably find trouble, like all lazy people eventually do.
Round two had some long enough sequences without branching paths that I just stopped mapping them. I was like, I'll start mapping again when there's a branch.
It's effectively just a long hallway broken up.
Yeah.
Still. What else?
I mean, I can complain about the ropes, which I alluded to earlier. I don't know. This game's got some very odd ways of being like, oh, you've got to do things exactly correctly. So you can do things like, instead of going downstairs, you can walk off the edge of the platform the stairs are next to and fall and take fall damage when you land. And like, if you jump from there, then you also take fall damage once you reach a certain point in your jump. And you also lose control of your jump once you reach a certain height.
Once you enter free fall, in a sense.
Yeah, for the ropes, you have to be very careful about the way that you press the jump button and the direction, or else you will push yourself off the rope with zero horizontal momentum and just fall, and probably take fall damage. And I did that all the dang time.
Yeah, you can like wiggle like a pixel left and right on the rope as you're going up and down. You do need to do several jumps in a row at various stages. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awkward where if you don't get like the timing of your inputs correctly, either your jump doesn't come out, then you hit left and you're dead, or you're in lava or a pit or whatever. Or, yeah, again, like just hit it too early, or you hit the ceiling. If you hit the ceiling, you lose all forward momentum and instantly drop.
And in some points, these are over bottomless pits.
Yes. And what happens when you fall in a bottomless pit?
You fall down and you meet... This was kind of an interesting translation choice. This translation called him Old Man Continue, but it's pretty clear that it's actually Enma Dayo, who is ruler of hell.
It is definitely Enma. I don't think that hint was referring to him as Old Man Continue. There is a corpse in round two that says, I'm Old Man Continue, and then tells you how to continue your game if you game over. And it tells you that if you hold up and start, if you game over, you just start again at the same round with the stuff you had at the beginning of that round.
Oh yeah, I guess so. I wrote them all down. So yes, it is. I am Old Man Continue.
Okay, cool. I'm lazy, but my memory has not failed me yet.
Yeah, sorry. You meet Enma Dayo.
Not the devil from the Bible, but, you know, Japanese-style Buddhist folklore, probably.
Yeah, if you don't know Buddhist folklore, you will recognize him from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, guess which one I am. Yeah, he will judge you for your sins. If you have a over half virtue, he'll be like, what are you doing here? You don't belong here. Get out of here. And then take some of your health away, I believe, and then just plop you right back at the beginning of the round.
Does he reset your inventory?
No, I believe it's just a teleport.
Okay, I just always save stated.
Yeah, you can use a pseudo Esper ability if you really need to go back to the beginning of the round. If that's faster, you could theoretically use that as a quick travel. But if you have low virtue, he will say, you piece of garbage, you sack of a man, your game is over, bye. And then, yeah, it's as though you died. This is what I choose to believe happens in Mario. I believe he is a sinful creature, a war criminal at least. Weirdly enough, this game will also use that to prevent a dead man walking scenario.
Yeah.
I don't know if you tried this. So in round one, feeding the deer.
What, did you end up with no food?
No, that won't do it. But if you do kill that deer before feeding him, instant game over. It's not even like reducing your karma. You're just instantly sent to hell. Same as if you try and kill a fairy when you release them at the end of the round.
You know, it never occurred to me.
You never just try to hit a fairy just to see what it would drop. Because there are other deer around.
Yeah, hitting other deer instantly drops your virtue to zero.
If you have high enough, it's not quite zero, but for most characters, it is.
So a priest can hit a deer and still be okay. Still be a virtuous man.
It's not one of the Ten Commandments, okay? You're allowed to hit deer. Nowhere in the Old Testament does it say they love deer.
I'm trying to remember what else actually drops your karma. Stepping on graves does. Picking up the bags.
Killing deer.
Does killing the snakes or the bees do it?
No, I'm pretty sure that gains you karma, or gains you virtue. It's good. God hates bees and snakes.
Yeah, I had a dumb problem with this, in that I felt like being able to tell what was happening with my virtue required me to pay a lot of attention to it, because there's no number. So you're just, like, seeing if a pip goes up some portion of the thing.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not enough of a threshold to actually be visually indicated. So you'll need to kill a couple of things before the pip goes, like, a quarter of the way up.
Yeah, I don't know. I came into it thinking the virtue system would be a lot more complex, or at least challenging, than it turned out to be.
Yeah, that's probably the most disappointing thing, kind of indicated at the jump here. Very perfunctory. It just kind of works itself out, and as long as you don't fall into a pit, you're fine. You're going to be killing things anyway, and that's kind of your only reward for killing things as well. Aside from it getting out of your way, is, oh, you get a bit of virtue back. Yay.
Yeah.
Your rosary still has ammo.
I guess there's a thing where, like, you fall, you get to go back because you have virtue, but now you don't have virtue, and now the undead can't be killed, so then it's harder to gain your virtue back. Well, you can do it by slowly killing the other enemies.
I think you can also do it by, like, despawning the undead, but I never really messed around with it. Like, if you just scroll them off screen.
That's weird.
It's an old NES game. Like, when they're off screen, effectively, they are dead, or at least no longer an issue.
Shouldn't be giving you their death benefits for that.
Yeah. That wouldn't be the only glitch in this game. I'm not sure if you fell through any of those moving platforms that go up and down.
I think once.
Yeah, I absolutely clipped through one as I was heading down. It was moving up, and the collision just didn't line up correctly. Right through.
There was a funny thing with the worm enemies, where for some reason the worm enemies, and only the worm enemies, would end up
clipping through the floor.
Yeah, clipping through the floor and then being at every vertical position all at once.
Because it just achieves infinite gravity. Yeah, I saw that a couple of times.
Just like strobing through the screen.
I wonder if that's an emulator issue for some of these as well.
Maybe, I don't know.
It's always tough to say, because I don't know about you, but I don't have the hardware copy of this old Famicom game.
Yeah, no.
It worked out all right as it is, and it would be far too much trouble to then try and patch the disc, the Famicom cartridge.
Cartridges are hard to patch. You gotta open them up and, like, solder things on them.
Too much effort for Spelunker 2.
But yeah, I don't know. The virtue is just, like, either it doesn't matter at all, I feel, or it is just, like, this morass that you sink into. And then one of the characters basically doesn't have to deal with it at all, because not only does he have really high virtue, the biggest effect of not having virtue, which is not being able to kill the undead, isn't a problem for him.
I think clergyman might actually be the most beginner friendly, even if it has low health. Just, you know, slam rations, you're fine.
Yeah, I guess so.
But just to have stun on a button, kill undead at will. But I just found that the Esper's ability to warp just cut out so much of the chaff. Even not knowing what was coming ahead, it was just the convenience of that really just cut down my playtime.
Fair.
But yeah, one last thing is the secret areas it's the way to progress, but you need to, like, have a vague hint at, oh, there's a hidden door over here.
Oh, yeah.
That I definitely needed to look up. One being in the grave area in round 2, where it says next to one of these graves that I guess didn't have a skeleton, but definitely wasn't that unique to just move into a random, try and move into the foreground at a random spot. Like, knowing it was there, it was still hard to find.
Yeah, it's the skeletons that don't have graves both have an entrance to a secret spot. One of them goes to a silver key, and a bag that I never opened because I just never had a key for that and then wasn't going to hightail it back to the beginning of the stage. And the other one is the way to progress.
Yeah, I had to look that up as well as in the final area to get to the final boss. You have to walk into a wall that's not a wall, which I had stopped doing early on. I had started in round one just to see. I was bombing random walls, never saw anything, never got any indication that there was. But then there was a hint that was just like, oh yeah, this guy moved into a wall, but it wasn't clear if that meant another foreground background entrance or a random wall. And it turns out it's the last thing I was going to check.
Yeah, that wall has a very subtle indicator. I accidentally spoiled it for myself. I was just like, I'm so lost right now, and looked stuff up and was like, hey, wait a minute, what's this thing that indicates wall and then a path through it? Most rooms, when you get near the edge, it stops scrolling, and this one didn't. It kept scrolling over and showing you more wall.
See, that's a Metroid classic. The original also kind of did that, where you need to see how the different rooms alternate scrolling, and that's how you got to one of the secrets. I can't believe I didn't catch that. And by can't believe, I mean it is entirely rational and reasonable. It is the children who are wrong.
Number three, very confusing, because like at some point you just end up in a ring.
Yeah, it's just one long hallway that spins around, keys everywhere, but thankfully was a fairly small area, all things considered. But that was just a couple of guide dang it moments.
That's just increasing the playtime.
Yeah, it's not a long game as it is, so it has some arcade pedigree, so I can understand the desire to really milk these coins, these non-existent coins out of children. Regardless, anything else on your end? Do you want to talk about the music, or is that...
for its period, I found it fine. I don't know. It didn't amaze me.
No, it is. It's not a classic in the making, nor is it assonant and annoying. So it did its job. You'll probably hear some at the beginning event and ending of the episode, as per usual. Make of it what you will. There aren't that many tracks to begin with. All right. Cleared. Done. Easy. Now, what was it competing against in the year of our Lord, 1987?
Yeah, so other games released in 1987 that won awards. There's Darius, Dragon Quest II, Outrun, Supari Uzumo, which is a sumo game, apparently.
Hell yeah.
Zombie Hunter, Shin Onigashima.
Are these arcade games?
These were Famicom games.
Okay. Not sure if they're like arcade ports or not.
I mean, Famitsu just loves having tons of categories, but they have a Critics' Choice category, which has tons of games in it.
Uh-huh. Are we going through all of them?
Of course.
Of course.
I mean, I'll go quickly. Family Computer Golf.
Damn, that was on the Famicom? Shit.
Bubble Bobble.
Yeah. I love that game.
Which I'm realizing now that I always say it with P sounds, but it's Bubble Bobble.
Yeah, you bobble. You don't bopple. What the hell's a bopple, you fool? You rube.
Sorry. Digital Devil Story Megami Tensei.
The very first, I believe.
Yeah, the very first one, which is apparently based on a light novel. I did not realize this.
Yeah, and there's also like an anime adaptation that's really not family friendly for a family computer game.
Nakayama Miho no Tokumeki High School, which is a dating sim.
Like, and it's like a pop idol at the time, I believe. Is it Star? I think that was the Square might have made that one. Maybe I'm wrong.
Faxanadu, which is another precursor / early Metroidvania.
Yeah, a spiritual sidestep, I guess, of a game we've already talked to death, Xanadu.
Yeah, Highway Star.
Oh, man. Based on the Deep Purple song.
Yes, clearly. Momotaro Densetsu, which is Peach Boy Legend.
Oh, Peach Boy Legend, of course.
Exciting Billiards.
A great alternative to all the other billiards games.
Yeah, they're categories of just like, there's gotta be like a billiards game, there's gotta be a mahjong game, wizardry, Salamander, Pro Yaku Family Stadium.
That's baseball?
Yeah. Yume Kojo Doki Doki Panic.
Yeah, aka Super Mario Brothers USA.
Yeah, Super Mario Brothers 2, which I did not realize that Doki Doki Panic actually was using a festival's mascots.
And then they did actually re-release the palette-swapped Mario version back in Japan as Super Mario USA.
Yeah, Fantasy Zone Hokkaido Rensa Sasujin Ohost ni Kiyu, or Hokkaido Serial Murders Disappearance in Ohost.
It's another adventure game.
Yeah, it's related to Portopia.
Oh, okay, yeah. The text-based mystery adventure.
Portopia Serial Murder Case is what it's called. It's apparently by the same designer and forms sort of a trilogy. Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
Love that game. I love it more than it deserves.
Although they specifically called it the Japanese title on the Famicom disc system. I have no idea how what we got on the non-disc system version, or if it differs at all.
It does. I believe there are new bosses as well as, like, I think music tracks? Can't remember, but this game, Spelunker 2, is actually very similar to Zelda 2, right down to the final boss being a dark guy with a shield you have to, like, manipulate in order to swing at his kneecaps.
It's true. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Hell yeah.
Shanghai SD Gundam World Gachapon Senshi. I had to look that up just because it said Gachapon. I was like, is there a gacha game in 1987?
I think it's just themed around. The source material has gacha in it.
Well, apparently your home base is a gachapon, and whenever you pay to spawn a Gundam, you get a random one.
But they're not doing microtransactions on the Famicom.
And by, like, when I say your home base is a gachapon, I mean literally a gachapon. Like, you are toys.
Cool. My dream.
Mizaze Pachi Pro Pachiokun.
Pachinko game?
Yes, it's a pachinko game. Side Pocket, I guess the competitor to Exciting Billiards.
The less exciting version. It's a game you play on the side.
Yeah, Tetsudo U, I think I'm saying that right. It means Railroad King. Apparently it's a board game series.
Okay, I'm absolutely not going to judge one way or the other whether or not you're pronouncing these right. I have no legs to stand on.
Yeah. Professional Mahjong Goku, because we've got the Mahjong game in there, Famitsu.
And apparently the DBZ license.
Goku means other things.
I know.
Afterburner, the weirdest category which I have ever seen.
Okay.
Best speech synthesis.
Nice. Oh, man. Old-ass speech synthesis owns, okay?
Which was given to Genpei Tomaden, which has been later called the Genji and the Heike clans.
Okay? Not familiar.
It's apparently an arcade side-scroller, which had good speech synthesis, I guess.
Sure. No, I really love that crunchy audio.
Psycho Soldier, which apparently has a character who would later become part of the King of Fighters cast.
Yeah, and also the best song in Smash Brothers now.
Okay.
Now, the Psycho Soldier theme, which also had like an English variant made, I think, just for either the arcade or Smash. I can't remember.
The Guild of Thieves, Nebulous, and also because apparently I'm not done listing games. These are games that I thought were somewhat notable that did not win anything.
Okay.
Mega Man. Metal Gear.
Huh.
Final Fantasy 1.
No one liked these games.
Phantasy Star 1.
Yeah, that's fine.
Shinobi. Street Fighter 1.
That game deserves the trash bin.
And Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest.
A game we may end up playing one of these days, if I have my druthers.
I've never played it myself, but it sounds like it was probably doing sort of the Metroidvania thing before Symphony of the Night. So I'd be curious to visit it.
If you squint, it kind of silhouettes into that shape, but I imagine the actual act of playing it will be less than ideal, given its reputation.
I mean, I heard on someone else's podcast an anecdote talking to the designer and being like, oh man, I really liked Castlevania 2. You should, like, re-release it. And he's like, don't all the villagers lie to you in that game? Why do you like it?
It was just a poor translation. Oh, man. Well, hopefully not next month, but wow, there's a lot of games there that I did not recognize. Thanks, Famitsu. I don't care about two different billiards games, one of them which was obviously better than the other, and no Final Fantasy. Gross.
Final Fantasy not beating out Dragon Quest II.
They don't know how to rank good games. Not like us, which is what we're going to do next. Hey, Tom, where do you think Spelunker 2, Challenge of the Hero / Brave, aka a Japanese title that I'm not going to try to pronounce, you just heard enough of them just then. Where do you think this game goes on your stack rank?
So I'm looking at Banjo-Tooie.
It certainly is the only one above Xanadu.
Like, for me, I was really mean about Metroid, apparently.
Oh, just wait.
Metroid at 25th right now. Kirby and the Amazing Mirror at 26th, which also feels a bit like I was just being salty.
We were both like, oh, it's just a maze. And other Kirby games are better, therefore... Fucking Metroid for the NES is better? What are we doing?
I mean, apparently other people put it among the top Metroidvanias, and I'm like, really? Like, there was a website that had, like, aggregate vote scores or something and put it at, like, 7th.
Okay, nobody tell them about this podcast. They will fucking crucify us.
And it was like, I just don't think that game's that good. I mean, maybe it's not 26th in this list, bad, rude, but...
Yeah, if I recall, there's a lot of, it's not the best Kirby game, and you just can't get out of the Kirby mindset.
Yeah, is it actually worse than Maze of Galious? Probably not, but apparently it's down in our shit list.
For me, I just think Maze of Galious is a more interesting game.
Back to actually ranking this one, I think that's also relevant, is like, the other ones that we played that are old, that aren't awful, had more interesting things going on. Although I think you could make an argument for, like, this one feeling a little more polished than Legacy of the Wizard. I don't know.
Legacy of the Wizard, I think, is of the NES entries easily the best, or at the very least, the most Metroidvania.
Yeah, the one that I'm most interested in.
And also, biggest step up for a sequel. Whew.
I think I'm going to put it between Banjo-Tooie and Xanadu.
I'm not surprised. Not in the slightest.
That's not a very controversial position.
No, we're not going to get a bunch of fucking Spelunker 2 stands coming out of the woodwork. No, this is the only real video game.
I don't know. There could be angry Xanadu fans being like, hey, Xanadu is so much bigger of a game and our karma system mattered more or something. I don't know.
You just didn't get it, man. You played as Explorer, which is just a noob mistake. Unfair. Anyway, so yeah, now the third worst game you've ever played in your life.
Yes, in my life. Never played any games off of this list.
Of course.
I was born sexy yesterday.
Listen, if it's not Metroidvania, is it really a video game? Not in my book, but speaking personally, you mentioned Metroid earlier, and so I'm kind of thinking I like this game more.
Yeah? More than Metroid?
For whatever reason, and by whatever reason I mean playing the original Metroid just kind of bums me out. They're both like really expansive mazes. They only have perfunctory progression. Metroid does have the benefit of having a constant stream of mini upgrades, whereas Spelunker is kind of more or less just defy entropy until you win. But I don't know. I just found, despite all of the jank and now knowing what to do, just thinking about what I would play again, I'm side-eyeing the leaderboard with one entry on speedrun.com and thinking, not now, but maybe one day I'll snag an easy second place.
Whoa, not even going for beating that person.
No, I'm familiar with Arthur Blues's skills. I know where I'm at. I'll take a close second and be happy, but not now. Maybe not ever, but potentially. Until we find something else for the NES, probably. This is going to be my new number 25, just above Metroid and just below Yoku's Island Express, Spelunker 2.
I mean, how much disrespect would you be giving Yoku's if you put this one over it?
Listen, I thought about it, but no. That would just be me taking the piss at this point, even more than I already am. And also, like, hey, we're just talking about Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. That's below Metroid, still.
Yeah, I mean, for both of us it is.
But I think that's where I'm going to lock it in, and you're on deck for giving us a new mission.
I am, and I've gone wildly all over the place with what I was going to choose for the game. I finally decided something a little more like Castlevania. I'm going to go for Chasm.
Chasm?
Yes.
Not familiar.
It's very much a Castlevania, but they tried to do a thing with procedural generation of the map. You get a map seed at the beginning of the game, and your map is unique in that seed. There's also some modes where you can have it randomize the map every time you go back into the castle, so to speak.
Okay, so I think we should probably have different map seeds?
Yeah, I guess so. I've played it through at launch. I don't think there was a ton of changes in terms of the main game mode, but I believe they added game modes.
Cool. That's what we'll have for next time. I think that's everything we need to say.
Oh, yeah. Find us on social media. We're the Inverted Castle where we can be, and on X, we have to be Inverted Castle P because Inverted Castle was taken and podcast didn't fit.
So never forget the P.
We'll be Inverted Castle Podcast other places. You can email us at invertedcastlepodcast@gmail.com. Or leave a comment on YouTube are probably the easiest ways to contact us.
You can max out your virtue bar by leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. But outside of that, I think we are done here. I've been Eric Fox.
And I've been Thomas Blade.
And remember, kids, bustin' makes you morally good.